Welcome to another episode of the Power Up Podcast. I'm your host, Trevor Scullion. Joining me today is Corey Burns from Beta Engineering. Corey does civil and structural work at Beta, and he's relatively new to the SDSIC, so he has a great perspective for some of the newer members just joining. So thanks for joining, and let's get things rolling. All right, well, thanks for joining me today, Corey. We've been trying to do this for a couple of weeks now, and glad you can come on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on, Trevor.
Oh, man, we wanted to do it live at the Kansas City event. Of course, we don't have professional, you know, Joe Rogan-style microphones, so it's a bit of a challenge to do. But maybe next year in Chattanooga, we could set something up for kind of a live podcast. It'd be great.
Yeah, I think that'd be a really fun experience, especially for people going to the conference, for them to kind of see that additional dynamic would be fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. Great idea. All right, man. So, you know, the real reason for the podcast is to introduce different members, bring on folks to talk about their company, the technology, pretty much anything, right? Project work going on. So why don't we kick it off by just kind of introducing yourself and your background and talk about how you came to Beta Engineering now.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, Trevor, you've had some real titans on this podcast. So I'm not going to necessarily measure up entirely to some of those guys. So I think hopefully I bring a bit of a different dynamic or a different perspective than some of the guys that have been in the industry for a decade or longer. I came to Beta Engineering almost 2 years ago now, which okay. is crazy to believe. It's going by so fast. But before that, I kind of worked back and forth between building design and transmission distribution.
Okay.
And so Beta Engineering, from my standpoint, was kind of a good and organic transition for me. I had been in transmission distribution before, but I was working in building design. Mm. And it's a totally different beast. So it's kind of fascinating to see the differences between the two. But Beta had reached out to me as they're going through a growth cycle, as is, I think, everybody, just right. the industry in general. Mm-hmm. And they offered a lot of good, in my opinion, arguments for coming over to them. One of them, for sure, was remote work, which I found really attractive.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I know it's not necessarily for every company, but Beta has really taken it, you know, headstrong, in my opinion, and done a really good job of incorporating it. So a lot of our team members are remote. And it really helps us recruit. So that was one thing that brought me into Beta. But more than anything, Beta was really focused on growing and really focusing on kind of, hey, what kind of technology do we currently have implemented? And right. how can we continue to grow that, improve that, and let that play into our business lines? So, nice. You know, they made a really compelling argument and they got me. So that's what kind of got me over to Beta.
And you're located in St. Louis?
That's right. Yeah. So okay. the company's out of Pineville, Louisiana, which is, if you're not familiar, it's if you look at the map of Louisiana, yeah, it's smack in the middle.
Yeah. So fun fact, Distran had hosted the SDSIC, geez, I don't know now, probably about 8 years ago or more in Pineville.
And Chris Wilson, who I work with, he's one of my coworkers over at Beta. He had let me in on that fact when I first came to the SDSIC in Nashville. And I was like, we got to do this again. How is this not something why is our name not splattered all over the SDSIC? So,
and it was an amazing event down there. They did a great job hooking that up and yeah, put on quite the party.
Yeah, we would, I can't speak for anybody at Beta, but I would love for us to be kind of bringing that back. If it's not in Pineville, maybe New Orleans, something somewhere in Louisiana. I think it'd be a really fun time.
Awesome. All right. I'll bring you up on that. That's awesome, man. So what was what's the core technology you're using now at Beta? Like what's the software for design?
Well, I mean, as you know, the industry's kind of in this unique flux, I think, to be totally honest. Mm-hmm. We use a lot of different programs. As with most clients in the industry, AutoCAD is still kind of the bread and butter. But a lot of our clients, in my opinion, I'm seeing shifts. Some were previously MicroStation and have shifted over to kind of the Autodesk side of things, but aren't necessarily in AutoCAD. You know, Inventor is a common circumstance that we're working with and working through. And then I presented this year on how, or this past SDSIC, on how we're trying to utilize Revit in a lot of our kind of 3D workflows. Things like that. You know, clients aren't necessarily fully on board with, hey, we want this thing to be done entirely on 3D just yet. At least not all clients.
Right.
But they still kind of want to have the benefits of clash detection and seeing the model in meetings and things like that. So there's kind of a unique balance that has to get struck there. Mm-hmm. So as far as platforms, you know, all the traditional platforms of AutoCAD, the typical design platforms of kind of like the RISA or SAP or CDEX, things like that. But then also the what I would consider somewhat more advanced levels of softwares as we're getting into them is the Inventor 3D side of things, you know, utilizing P4A, P4I. Those are all things that we're seeing a lot of. And then, like I said, Revit is one that I think we see a lot of potential in. And I'll give a shout out here, Shabnam Pazuki over at Power. She gave a great presentation just this last SDSIC showing kind of how you can harness some of
that. Yeah, she did. Yeah, well, I mean, we're becoming more and more fascinated with Revit as well. I think we're seeing a lot of it in the industry. I think we see a lot of engineering firms that have Revit expertise already. So yeah, we're starting to see it everywhere.
Yeah, somebody made a really good, I would love to give it a shout out, and I should remember the name off the top of my head, but I can't quite, but somebody gave a really good argument for it at the presentation or at the conference and was saying, hey, look, I can find a lot more people who have experience in Revit than I can 3D, you know, definitive experience in Inventor. So that pool of talent is kind of already there from the building design side of things.
Right, right.
And exactly, so it's, there's a nice argument or at least pathway there, I think, to say, hey, you know, maybe we don't reinvent the wheel in some aspects, but maybe we do. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, and you think like Autodesk is so behind Revit and the entire kind of architectural platforms, the amount of information and data they're adding to Revit alone. So like Dynamo scripts and, you know, being able to do all this generative design stuff in Revit, it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. And I can't wait. I think that we've got a really... maybe we'll get into the AI conversation later on. I think there's a real conversation to be had there with regard to some of the computational design aspects and where our industry goes, either stepwise. But I totally agree. Autodesk is so heavily behind the Revit infrastructure and architecture that it's a very compelling, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, it's a great, you know, great platform to leverage to kind of drag our industry along, because the things that are being done in the architectural space are pretty awesome, right? I mean, you look at generative design on like building floor plans and stuff. I mean, they're just pushing the envelope for sure.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I had an old colleague from when I was in building design come and give a presentation. It was to Sean Weekly's Innovative Solutions Group. And just walk through exactly what you just described, you know, kind of showing what the capabilities are, what really the architecture side of things is using that computational design for. And I think it was illuminating for some people, mind-blowing for others, right. Including myself, because even when I was working with this guy, it was kind of, it wasn't what it is now. And some of the stuff they're doing now, it's a very elaborate and very expansive. So I totally agree.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I work on a lot of the Autodesk platform services and some of the newer stuff on Forma. And it's almost like every time you're just about getting stuck trying to build something, they release a new part of the API or a new functionality that just takes care of it, right? So it's like every 2 weeks, there's something new that could completely change the workflow and help you get it automated. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, if anything, that's almost one of the challenges is that it's changing so rapidly. Sometimes you got to keep up, but I totally agree. More often than not, it's kind of like a patch to address something or a change to address something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, and you know, with the cloud, it's just all the cloud platforms now, it's the release of information is so fast. You know, it's not the same as, you know, we had to update the desktop applications and everything. It's almost instant now. Like every week they can put out a new API set for us to use. It's crazy.
Totally true. Yeah. So true.
So, hey man, let's shift gears. So we'll come back around to technology for sure, but I want to get your feedback just on the SDSIC. So were you involved before beta?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I wasn't involved before Beta. When I first came to Beta, my coworker Chris, he said, "Hey, look, there's this consortium. We've been a part of it in the past, and I've kind of consistently gone to it. If you're interested in this kind of stuff," which I clearly was, "you should come along with us." And I'm giving Beta credit here. They're very supportive of our employees when it comes to kind of if there's an industry consortium you're interested in or something, you know, they're usually very welcoming to you kind of going and traveling. Obviously, they take care of all the expenses in that regard. So they were more than happy for me to go with Chris. And this was in Nashville. So that was really my first exposure. So I really, before that, even though I had been in transmission distribution, I had not heard of or been to the SDSIC. And when I got there, I was like, how is it possible that I didn't hear about this, know about this, have been to this? I mean, this is the space. This is where the tech is coming into the industry. You know, I mean, Trevor, we were both at IEEE, and no knock there, great exposition. They do great work. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of different directions going on at the expo. It's sometimes kind of hard to stay focused in one space. Whereas at the SDSIC, there's a lot of different directions going on, but it's largely tech driven or focused kind of, hey, this is what's next. This is what's coming up. And right. I think that's what really specializes the SDSIC and gives it a uniqueness that other spaces don't have.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yep, good feedback. So then I think the, you know, having folks come in like yourself and just talk about projects sometimes, right? The way they applied the latest technology, whatever it is, whatever, you know, Bentley, MicroStation, you know, AutoCAD, Autodesk, you know. But talking about the projects and how they got them done and the workflow, you know, lessons learned, even what not to do. Like, it's just so critical to hear those presentations. It's great.
And I've been a huge supporter of the mindset that the SDSI brings in. And by that, I mean that it's really not there for people to come and advertise their company. I think that's kind of a secondary benefit that you get by presenting. So when I come or when I presented, and the mindset that we had is, you know, let's give it all out there. Good, bad, ugly, indifferent. Let's lay the reports on the table, and just someone's more than happy to raise their hand and be like, that was a foolish mistake that you made. And I'll take it. You're probably right. I zig where I should have zagged, but I'm throwing it out there so somebody else doesn't do it. Or, you know, maybe I didn't even know that I zig where I should have zagged. Yeah. And somebody raises their hand like, hey, did you know that this is a feature in Revit? You know, I should have, but I didn't. That's just that's what I like additionally about the SDSIC. It's very open, very honest feedback, people just trying to help people in the industry, even direct competitors. And I think that's something you just don't get at some of these other spaces and conferences.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and I, you know, it's incredible to me that we've been able to keep that friendly atmosphere over the growth of it. And, you know, we started so small, like 18 people in Nashville, and now it's, you know, we had 357 in Kansas and these 370 in Nashville. Like, it still has that same, you know, it's kind of like a TED talk where we're sharing and talking about different ideas and concepts and throwing out things that, hey, what do you think of this, and getting feedback, which is, it's pretty great that it's stayed that way. And I hope it stays that way in the future.
I hope so too. You guys have done a really good job caretaking of that entire concept. So I give all the credit to you and the rest of the leaders that have been running the SDSIC for what has been 11 years now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we've had such great leadership over the years. Absolutely great. So yeah, thank you. Oh, yeah. And hey, big shout out to Chris Wilson. Been there
absolutely
for a long time. And I love that he brought you on board like that. It's that's great to hear.
He's a big proponent as well. He's been a big fan for a long time of everything that you guys have done and the consortium. So we had more people, I think, this year than we did last year. You know, we're consistently staying involved as much as I think we've been able to. And we very firmly believe in it. So
That's great. We love having Beta involved. You guys have been awesome over the years. And yeah, keep going. Keep growing.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So seeing as it's so new, I like to ask any advice for maybe a newbie coming in. You know, part of the podcast is, you know, folks are shy, a lot of introverts in the engineering world. So I'd like to bring people in. And maybe they can listen to the podcast before showing up in Chattanooga next year. And, you know, they can kind of get used to what the SDSIC is all about. So any recommendations for a newbie coming in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, first and foremost, let me lay the groundwork. As if it hasn't been clear yet, I was a newbie last year. So for anybody listening, you know, it's take it firsthand from me. The first thing you're going to want to do is plan ahead. There's going to be a lot of stuff that you're going to want to see. So make sure you lay out your presentation list ahead of time and just kind of, all right, this is where it's going to be. This is what it's going to be about. And just make sure that you're there the whole time, the whole presentation. Don't scoot out of any of the presentations. Right. You might find more than likely that there's going to be two that you want to see. They're at the same time, two different locations. You obviously can't be at both. Pick one and run with it. Don't go to one, sit kind of a quarter way through and then head out because it's not exactly what you thought it was. I had that happen to me at one of them in the first the first conference that I went to. And my coworker's like, man, you missed it. At the tail end of this presentation, they went into this. I was like, oh, unbelievable. How did I miss that? So definitely don't scoot out on the presentations early. The other thing I would note, and this is one that I was big on the first moment that I went to, and just I'm big on in general, is network. Network as much as humanly possible. Get everybody's business cards, whether they be digital or hand print, or, you know, print. Communicate with people, talk to people. Don't eat lunch alone, and don't eat lunch with your team if you can prevent it, to be honest with you. Kind of a rule that, like, if I go to these conferences, I tell my team, you know, don't take offense if I don't eat with you, because it's nothing personal, but we spend a lot of time together. I'll eat lunch with you any other day of the week, but I came here to meet other people, talk to other people, share ideas. So I'm going to do that. So don't eat lunch alone, and don't eat lunch with your team.
That's great.
It's an odd piece of advice, but it's worked so far.
That's great advice.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think Chris Wilson and I happened to be eating together, or we shared a lunch with somebody who was at SBSIC at SBS, and it ended up being kind of one of the leaders at SBS. We had a great conversation with them, and it wouldn't have happened had we just kind of kept in our space and ate lunch just he and I.
Right.
It only happened because we decided specifically it was somebody new. And so you just never know who you're going to potentially bump into, talk to, or lunch with. So network as much as humanly possible.
That's great advice. Great advice. And, you know, I think it's easier to reach out, you know, over an email or, heck, even text or call or whatever after you've met someone face to face. It's so much easier to just send a quick email, ask a question, because, you know, you did spend that time at lunch or an evening event or whatever talking.
Well, and it's so easy to forget, you know, in our kind of very digital lives that it's a person on the other side of the email or the phone call, you know, so we're human and we fall victim to the very human elements of being people, of just kind of, if you don't know somebody, a random email is more likely to probably, hey, get pushed at the bottom of the heap. And there's a mountain of other work that has to get done. And I don't even know who this person is that's emailing me. So I'm, you know, save that for later today. And sometimes later today never comes. So if you've seen somebody in person, you've shook their hand, you've seen their face, it makes it much harder to avoid that email. And it makes it, if anything, more important, because you might have liked the person that you met. So it just makes all the difference.
No, that's absolutely. Yep. And, you know, the evening events are great too, right? It's kind of laid back, you know, lots of laughter and kind of joking around. So it kind of, like you said, opens that friendly conversation and allows you to remember the person in a different light when you send that email.
Totally.
Yeah. Awesome.
You actually got into something there, and I don't want to change gears too much here, but
no.
you asked me if I had any advice or feedback for the SDSIC. I don't necessarily have too much there, but I think your listeners would benefit from hearing about your background, Trevor. You know, I've listened to all the podcasts, and I've been to two SDSICs, but I've had to ask around, like, hey, man, Trevor seems like this really unique, interesting guy. You know, what's his background? Would you have any interest in giving your listeners kind of what your background is and how this whole thing came to be?
Oh, yeah, sure. I guess we could.
I'm going to flip the script on you.
Damn, I didn't know you were going to do that now. yeah, I mean, I started in manufacturing, like out of school, I went to ABB and robotics, and it was always on the computer science side. But I think in early college days, it was hooked on the computer design side. So 3D computers, way back, a long time ago. and I was working with Caterpillar and some of the larger manufacturing companies then. And back then it was Pro Engineer was the main kind of 3D, system. You could do all these mechanical designs and simulations on. So I had an idea for a product configurator on the web. It was like web 1.0, the first .com boom back in the day. And kind of left the company I was working for, went off, started my own company, got some venture capital. I built that up over the years, sold that one off, went to work at Autodesk for like 7 months, started another company, which became Automation Force, which one of the very first projects we were doing. And we were looking at these things, much like you did with package substations, as a huge mechanical assembly. And one of the first companies I met was Duke Energy. And Duke was Arnold Fry and Jeremy Morton, Jared Driggers. They were all there. And I went in to meet them for the very first time, almost 20 years ago now. We went in and started looking at how we could automate a substation, did a bunch of work there, created the SDS tools. We had a whole tool set on AutoCAD Electrical and Inventor, and worked on that for several years. And in that process, started the SDS IC with a very good friend of ours named David Milks, who was at Autodesk, and Arnold Fry. It was kind of the three of us sitting at an airport, leaving a meeting, and David said, it's funny, all these utility companies talk. Why don't we get them all in the same room? Call it a consortium. We'll get them all together and we can share ideas and concepts. And that's how that started. And from that, we got all the ideas around building these different tools and softwares. And yeah, we built it up over the years. We sold it to Autodesk. They made me a good offer back then. And we weren't really having success within Autodesk. So we decided to look for a partner. We found SBS, so Spatial Business Systems, which we are today, moved the team and all the software over to them for development. And it's been booming and growing since. That was about 7 years ago now that we had moved it from Autodesk to SBS. So yeah, so things are booming and the consortium is, I think we're at 2,118 members.
It's hard to believe how fast time flies by, right?
God, does it ever.
I mean, you mentioned it 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And now here you are. You've been leading what is, I would consider, a industry-leading kind of tech conference. You start and sold multiple businesses through this industry. I mean, one, that's a testament to you, but two, that's a testament to what this industry can provide people, which I think is awesome.
I appreciate that. It is such a great industry, right? I mean,
very cool.
Yeah, very cool. And it's one of the things now we're like trying to get some younger folks interested, right, in the industry and trying to get them out of college. And, why would you want to come work for the power grid, right? Isn't that an antique?
It's definitely a hurdle that I feel like we're making progress getting past for sure. Especially with how much growth is going on in the industry right now, but it's arduous at times for sure. It doesn't quite have the allure of building design quite yet, but I think we're getting
one. It's, I don't know if you saw this chat grid and it's, it was an effort put out by the NLPP. It was shown at IEEE too, I think. And I talked about it on my digital twin panel, but they basically looked at the entire grid, found a way to use the kind of OpenAI SDKs. And instead of having a digital twin dashboard, you can actually have a chat with the power grid.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen it, just check it out. It's like a GitHub project you can clone and you can actually run this thing. So you can ask it things like, where's the biggest power draw right now at this date and time? You could ask it for historical data, like just brilliant. And you look at stuff like that and you think, no, I think there's going to be a lot of, definitely computer science guys leaving college and gals thinking, yeah, there might be some interesting work to do there on the power grid because, man, we got enough data for all kinds of AI for sure.
That's absolutely right. And I feel like tools like that exemplify the potential. You know, maybe the industry is not quite there yet as a whole. But us exemplifying tools like that of kind of, hey, this is where we could be. We got to get better organized on where our data is housed, you know, what the security protocols are around those, and how we could potentially leverage these stuff to really, in my opinion, get that digital twin to the next level to say, hey, this is kind of why you want and need a digital twin. From the standpoint of, look, there's real operability benefits and cost savings that can come from an upfront cost of having these digital twins built out at the onset. That's really cool. I actually had not. I try to pay close attention to your posts on LinkedIn, so I'm sure you posted it, but I must have missed it. But that sounds fascinating. This might be dipping us into the AI conversation a little bit, but I love the on ideas or concepts that are coming out of kind of the fallout of the AI developments, especially in our industry. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that so ChatGrid is the name of that GitHub, and it's open source, so you can check it out and clone it or get your IT guys to clone it for you. You can run it on a server, but yeah, it's fascinating, and it like you said, it's a great example of what could be done. And I think we're just starting to scratch the surface. I think once we get some more talent in our industry, some of those MIT and Stanford grads coming out with AI degrees. The amount of things that they could do for us in, predictive analytics and maintenance and predictions on weather and storms. I mean, who knows?
I'm with you. I think, and this speaks broader to the industry as a whole, but I think if you're in this industry, and this is just my personal two cents, strap in, buckle up. It's going to be a ride for the next 5 to 10, in my honest opinion,
Oh, yeah.
between the finances that are rolled into this industry through whether it be data centers or renewables, all that good stuff. And the tech that's out there that hasn't quite yet been implemented in our industry. You know, we talked about this earlier with regard to where the building design industry or architecture industry is and where we are. There's a lot of space there. There's a lot of catching up to do, so to speak. So it's kind of one of those situations, in my honest opinion, some of these energy providers are going to start having trouble kind of saying, well, we don't want to do this for this or that reason. They're going to, I think, start seeing dollars and cents savings. And some of these tech innovations that they can't necessarily avoid or don't want to avoid for good reasons. And if you're on the contracting side, like Beta is, there's going to be downstream impacts of that. So it's kind of a, hey, let's strap up and get ready to go because it's going to be fun,
Yeah, it's
to say the
definitely
least. I'll just put
moving.
it that way. It'll be fun.
Well, it's pretty amazing when you look at the even just AI itself, right? And you look at the amount of power it's going to need to do some of these, AI models and compile them and, have them running in real time. They were talking about the amount of data, not just data, but the actual energy source it needs, right? We're going to need these massive freaking power centers just to power the AI itself.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've seen a number of conversations, both via articles or online, LinkedIn conversations about some of these data centers that they're talking about or plant that are in plans. You know, they're in the space of kind of talking about, well, let's just build a small modular reactor, a nuclear reactor, and just use that as our power source. And yeah, I mean, frankly, if you're the power consumption that you're talking about, you're going to need for some of these data centers, like you mentioned, for AI. It's enormous, and it starts to justify those conversations. So it's amazing to see how much potential growth is in the industry and what that's, in my opinion, going to lead to technology-wise for our industry.
No, I completely agree. I think we're just scratching the surface. I mean, it is fairly new, right? I mean, even the chat grid and some of the work I was doing with Subs GPT now, it changes every 2 weeks. Like every 2 weeks, you see something new and think, oh, damn, maybe I should try that now. It's just
Absolutely. I mean,
like,
it's crazy to think that probably, I don't know, when I got in this industry 4 or 5 years ago, what you're talking about with regard to AI, that wasn't a conversation. You know, that wasn't even talked about as even potential had impact. And then over the course in a matter of what feels like a week, but really it was just like a couple of years, it went from there's no way that's going to play into to okay, how do I harness this in my day-to-day life? That's aggressive change. I'm very curious. So first of all, you kind of dropped that in there, and that kernel of SubsGPT, what you presented on, I think was fascinating. I think it was awesome from the standpoint of what I would consider to be that one of those leaps of kind of AI in itself is a whole different technology from what we currently use. Mm-hmm. And in our industry, not too many people are even doing what I would consider like, computational design. And you went from where we are to you're now essentially showing that it's plausible to have a substation, at least layout, and right. a layout in 3D produced by an AI. I mean, for people mm-hmm. that weren't there, give the rundown. I think that's something worth advertising, Trevor.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's been, it's fairly new for us. We got it ready for Kansas City so we could talk at the consortium about it. But, it's a lot of the R&D I've been doing for probably a year and a half now and trying to harness, as you said, it's a wild stallion of AI, try to grab a hold of it and see what we could do. And it kind of naturally progressed into that kind of proposal stage, that kind of pre-planning stage of substation. So, picking a map location, kind of sizing some different areas, and then, basically letting AI kind of generate some different layouts and designs to see if it could optimize the spaces and the energy flow. And what we did is the first prototype is really around kind of collector substations for wind farms. So you can kind of pick the number of turbines you have and, pick an area and connection point and kind of let it do its generation. Now, the fascinating part for me was putting it together, and in the back end, it's a large language model like ChatGPT, but it uses a RAG architecture, which is the retrieval augmentation generation, blah, blah, from the actual setup of it. But it's trained on local documentation. So if you have a bunch of standards and IEEE stuff, it can go through that and digest it, and it does this kind of tokenization that AI does, but it spits out a proposal. And we've been trying different ones, and I've been sharing it with engineers, and I'll send you one after this, Corey. And when you look through it and you think, damn, like it's pretty accurate, and I don't see it replacing engineering. I only see it as an augmented tool. You have another tool at your disposal to do the automation and do the mundane stuff of putting clauses together and making sure everything's in the proposal. It builds like a 22 page proposal.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's insane. It's one of those things, when we finished it, you stand back and go, oh, damn.
This is possible. This is real.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a real eye-opener. And again, it's not, there's a lot we could do and there's a lot more to do. And I know Autodesk is adding Autodesk AI, right, to Revit and AutoCAD, and they're going to have all these great tools for us. So I think we could probably be able to push the design side a lot further. But right now, just in that kind of proposal generation side, it's been, I think it's going to be a great tool for folks.
I think that hits the nail directly on the head. It's this industry, it's baby steps, as in any industry. New tools, they take time to develop out. You touched on kind of two things that I think are worth reiterating is one, it's not going to take somebody's job, in my personal opinion, especially with the growth that we have in our industry and the expected demand both now and into the future. Right. Any technology that gets introduced now for sure is not replacing anybody. If anything, that person is going to have to learn how to use a new tool, maybe.
Right.
This is a perfectly good example of kind of how we can accelerate proposal processes and getting those proposals to a point where it's just editing at that point of kind of,
yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's a huge time saver. That's a benefit for everybody. One of the things that I think is a worthwhile comment in general about the energy industry is that it has a huge impact, frankly, a disparate impact on standard of living in anywhere on the globe.
So true.
You look at the cost of, or the standard of living, and its correlation to the cost of energy. Mm. And it's a direct correlation, right. Almost one for one. And anything, in my opinion, we do on the design side of things that can help kind of either drive that down in some regard, I almost feel as though we have a responsibility to do in some regards. And if that means kind of new technology that can accelerate some of our processes and get better products out faster, mm. I think that's something that should be done personally. So there's kind of an aspect of that, that it's, there's like an ethical standard to it, but also just a fun coolness to it that, hey, yeah, like you said, this is doable. This is potentially really implementable.
Right. Right.
that kind of stuff is fascinating. And one of the things that I really liked about your presentation, and I noted this earlier, is that you did the kind of leapfrog. You know, the architecture industry has gone step by step through this whole thing to kind of get to potentially implementing AI into their workflows through what I would consider the computational or generative design process.
Right.
And that's something that our industry still hasn't quite done. I mean, we're working on the 3D digital twins.
Right.
But in the mix, there is that kind of computational design or generative design, i.e. the Dynamo or the Grasshopper scripts. And kind of how those play into those. For any listener, if you haven't ever seen Dynamo or Grasshopper, these are kind of these are computational design tools in which you can string together blocks of data warehouses to put together what is essentially an algorithm. You don't have to necessarily script for them. So right. You don't have to know code language or anything like that. You can kind of place and build blocks together and string them together. Literally, there's kind of strings between these blocks to develop what are essentially algorithms. And I think there's a lot of space in our industry for at least even just tinkering with that. But you kind of did the leapfrog where you jump right over that whole step and you got right into, all right, AI is just going to take care of all this for me. All that computational design, that's all going to get taken care of for me through the AI. I just got to give it all the data.
Right. Yeah. And that's a natural thing for the AI side. You know, the large language models, like you have so much data around proposals, and you know, most utility companies and engineering firms have, you know, all these historical proposals they've put together, you know, different customers, different locations, you know, estimates and costs and all that stuff. So it's kind of the perfect tool for that. That, do the Dynamo scripts, you're spot on. Yeah, I see that. And that's another reason the whole Revit platform, given the Dynamo scripts to any engineering person that learned Revit and let them go. and just let them do that kind of no code or low code interface. The tools that I think they're going to come up with is absolutely crazy. And lately I've been thinking that maybe the SDSIC, we should have like a Dynamo script library or repository somewhere up there where everyone could share these scripts.
Trevor, that's a great idea.
Right? There should be a bunch of them.
One of the things that I think our industry kind of struggles with is, you know, we're natural competition is kind of what breeds the innovation sometimes, but sometimes it can be a hindrance. And sometimes I feel like there's not, like I said, one of the reasons I like the SDSIC is that the information is shared openly and freely.
Right.
And to your point, if there's kind of a repository, a space where some people can go to kind of share these ideas specific to our industry, to kind of say, hey, here's a Dynamo script that I put together that, that does lightning protection or something like that from a design standpoint. Like, okay, cool. You know, it may not work for everybody. Probably it won't work for everybody, but at least it's kind of getting that idea rolling in the right direction. I think it's a great idea, Trevor.
Yeah. And it was, Josh Clark was the physical committee chair for a number of years. And, he had mentioned doing it for, you know, Inventor kind of iLogic scripts as well. And I know him and Steve Kaufman were, you know, just silly little things, but you know, Steve and Josh had scripts in Inventor that would kind of clean up your bill of material and all the attributes and at a click of a button.
So, and
it wasn't life-changing, but boy, it certainly saved you a couple hours of work.
For somebody, I guarantee it was life-changing. Right. And that's the funniest part is like somebody along the lines is like, oh my gosh, my day-to-day life just became so much better.
Yes.
So the funniest part is, you know, you might write that script and be like, it doesn't do anything for me. Somebody else is going to pick it up and be like, oh my gosh, you know, my whole job is time savings now. It's
that's it.
Which is so cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I think that's something we should pursue, and we'll bring it up the next committee meeting. That's
good idea. Yeah. You, I mean, Trevor, you hit the nail on the head. You give Dynamo, you open the door to Dynamo to somebody who's learned Revit, and just watch them run. I've been in that shoe. I've been in that place before. You know, at the building design side of things, you know, when I first came into the industry, Dynamo was brand new. And
Right.
one of my coworkers was like, "Hey, have you experienced this?" I was doing a lot of scheduling work, when you're new, when fresh out of school or something like that, you're not getting the most complex stuff. And so I was taking care of a lot of our cleanup sheet, QAQC, making sure all of our column schedules were all good and all that stuff. And one of my coworkers said, "Hey, have you tinkered with Dynamo at all?" I was like, "What's Dynamo?" And that was all it took. I opened it up, started to play around with it, watched a couple of videos on YouTube, and my whole life at the time was turned upside down of kind of, oh my gosh, I can write a script that does in 2 minutes what would normally take me a day and a half. That's the kind of stuff that I think what the S at, that the SDSIC brings to the industry. That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, we'll bring that up with the team and leadership team and see what they think. And yeah, it might be a really good addition to the SDSIC. See if
Cool.
folks can start sharing those scripts, because I bet there's a lot out there.
Probably so. Probably a lot more than I realize or think, That
Well,
always
and
ends up being the
someone,
case.
yeah, I bet someone's already gone through the trouble of, finding a script that worked in architectural and, change the BIM content for a substation or something. I bet there's all kinds of them out there.
Now it's just a matter of getting them to share it, right?
Yeah,
It's
that's
like, come on,
right.
share that intellectual property with everybody. We need the help.
That's it. Yeah, we'll have to have like a bar night at the next consortium for anyone that shares scripts gets free beer.
That's a great idea. Free drinks for anybody who has shared a script, or one
That's
drink
it.
per script.
Yeah, that's it. All right, Corey. So let me ask you this. Biggest challenges and rewards in your day-to-day work. And everything going on, everyone's got a busy schedule, everything you go through. What's your biggest kind of challenges and rewards?
Biggest challenges and rewards, honestly, is getting that advancement, that kind of tech advancement, not just personal advancement. I suppose that's one direction we could go. Everybody's interested in their personal professional advancement, and
Sure.
I'm no different in that regard. But any industry that you're in, introducing something new and trying to push that along to become a regular day-to-day workflow, getting it to that next level of this is our standard operating procedure.
Right.
For no company is that easy. Anybody
Right.
who says that they're able to do that on a regular day-to-day basis, I have an apprehension of belief. I've been a number of companies, and none of them are able to just kind of flawlessly introduce some new technology. But when you get that, when you are able to kind of bring that in, bring your team and your workflows to the next level, and provide your customers and clients that next level of service, that's a big reward, at
Man,
least for
awesome.
me, for sure. But I know it is in my honest experience with other people as well. So if for me, that's usually one of the biggest challenges, rewards, or even motivators, on a day-to-day side of things.
Now that's great. Yeah, awesome. All right, man. Anything else you want to close out on? I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions at the end, but yeah, we think we captured everything that we need for now.
We covered a lot of ground. One thing I do want to do is I want to give a shout out to Jack Hobson. He's been a huge influencer for me, professionally as well as through the SDSIC. He's been welcoming. I mean, he was willing to meet with me and just grab drinks. We happen to both live in St. Louis. I just reached out to him, and he couldn't have been a nicer guy. So big shout out to Jack. I think he's been a big proponent of the SDSIC as well as just in general. I think he's just an all around.
Oh man, that's great. Yeah, Jack and I go back quite a ways now, and he's been a steady in my life, I think, as we've been going through technology and his new role at Autodesk. Him and I spent a lot of time together, and going through the AI and a lot of the work that I did on SubGPT is actually with Autodesk Forma, kind of the front end tools there. So yeah, that's awesome, man. Jack is phenomenal. And yeah, for all the listeners there, Jack is our key Autodesk contact for the SDSIC. So any Autodesk related questions or anything, just reach out to Jack. Very cool. All right, Corey. So you want to one of the things I love asking people, because it's very open, I think, from your history and your standpoint and everything you experienced. So could you recommend maybe three books for our listeners?
Oh yeah. I like reading, and I'm I'm big into kind of self-improvement books. Sometimes it's a little cheesy, sometimes not, but there are three books that I almost always, two I definitively always recommend. One we incorporate internally at Beta quite a bit, but the first one is Good to Great. It's an older book.
Love it.
But I mean, it's a Jim Collins classic.
Yeah.
And for anybody that hasn't read it, go pick it up off the shelves, start reading it. You probably won't be able to put it down.
So it's great. Dude, I love that. I love one of the sayings in that book was you look for an area in your life or work where great things are happening and nobody's taking credit for them. And you'll find an amazing person, right?
Absolutely. The hedgehog concept, everything about that book is spot on. And you read it.
Awesome.
It's one of those books you read it and you're like, this, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
You see the kind of, they almost put data behind it, and it's like, it's so obvious. Why isn't it happening organically?
But,
so that's the first one I almost always recommend. Another one that may be a little less known. It's also not very new, but it's called Hug Your Customers by Jack Mitchell.
It's a
customer service oriented book that essentially talks about how to take care of your customers and grow your customer base by taking care of your customers and what you can do for them. Great book, great author, very worthwhile. I recommended it recently to a coworker at Beta, and same situation. He picked it up and was not able to put it down. He immediately forwarded it to like three of the executive team members. Like, you guys got to read this. It's nice. it's kind of one of those books. and then that third one, it's called 4DX, the Four Disciplines of Execution. Great book with a lot of background information and data to support the concepts of executing what are called wildly important goals, or WIGs. I didn't come up with the acronym, but and it essentially is how you implement change at a company, a methodology to introduce change and kind of like what I was talking about, get to that next level of standard operating procedure.
Man, awesome. Man, that's like one of the biggest barriers I think in our industry right now is that kind of diversity to change, right? Nobody's really open to wanting to change anything at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a challenge for sure. So getting that methodology in place, I think, is really the first step. It's that's critical to getting that change that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great recommendations, man. I'll try to put those somewhere in the podcast listing so folks can find the books, and appreciate that, Corey.
Yeah, no problem. Trevor, I really appreciate you having me on. You taking the time. I mean, we've been talking for almost an hour now. After splicing and whatnot, any edits, maybe it'll be shorter than that. Who knows? But
I don't know. I think you've got a lot of good stuff. Yeah,
you know,
I know.
I really appreciate you taking the time, sitting down and talking with me, especially, I mean, I think I said this when we saw each other at IEEE, but, I think you've had some real titans on this show, and to everybody who's listening, it's not necessarily, exclusive to them, reach out to Trevor. I think he'd be potentially more than happy to have people on here. So
yes,
I've only been with the SDSIC for 2 years. Take it from me.
No, I appreciate it. And that is so true. This is not about any level of job description or anything at all. It's anyone like yourself, Corey, it's got interesting things to say and, is willing to get on and talk about their background and everything. This is what it's for. I would love to be able to get one every week. I think it'd be really great a lot of folks want to be on there and, talk about their background, man. It's a fascinating thing. We talk about AI and all this great stuff, but there is nothing as fascinating as the human being.
So true. That is so true.
Hey, man, I really appreciate the time, Corey. I am going to probably set up a podcast where a bunch of us can get on and talk about AI. I think that would be really interesting, and I will invite you to that one, too.
Sure, I'd love to be involved in that. I really appreciate that invitation. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, let's do it, man. I'll be in touch for that one. But thanks so much, Corey. I really appreciate you being on, man. Have a great day.
Awesome. You too.
Thank you for listening to the Power Up Podcast today. If you enjoyed this conversation and you're not yet a member of the SDSIC, join for free at sdsconsortium.com. Be part of the community and all these great conversations. And maybe you'll be the next guest on the Power Up Podcast.